There's no place quite like home, right? This is the Real Crime Podcast.
True crime listeners, need more intrigue and death in your life? We're Kim and Mary from Mystery Knox Podcast, and we're a podcast that covers unsolved deaths, disappearances, and mysterious cases.
Come join us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts as we pick apart these unsolved cases and try to make sense of the mysterious, puzzling, baffling, enigmatic.
I think they get it. We're good.
Oh, okay. So grab your tea or coffee and snacks and join us.
And remember, stay weird. Stay curious.
Hey, everybody, it's Christina.
I'm Christina.
I sort of caught her off guard. we're quite the pair today. Definitely going to be your two favorite humans to listen to because she's got, Kristen has a migraine.
Beginnings of a migraine.
Starter of a migraine. And I pulled something in my left shoulder, and so I'm just sort of in lovely amounts of pain right now. It's super fabulous. So, happy to be here. Yeah, I know. We're like super broken. So we're here to tell you today about part three of the Rebecca Zahow.
We should be closing up the case today.
Yes.
And by closing up the case, I don't mean solving it.
I mean,
we're going to stop talking about it.
We're going to stop talking about it. So you guys will be able to listen to other things going forward. Yeah, we're going to just kind of summarize what's been going on since our last episode. What's been happening with the civil trial and things like that and what occurred. And then the current state of the property itself and what happened from there. So
here we go.
Before we jump in,
nope, just kidding.
Just kidding, JK. I just want to remind everybody, on September 18th, we are going to be at CT Horror Fest. So if you go to our bio on our Instagram, at The Real Crime Podcast, you can click on our link tree, and from there, it will take you to a link for CT Horror Fest's website where you can buy your tickets in advance. You can also get tickets at the door. We are going to be there. Matthew Lillard is also going to be there. He is in no way affiliated with our podcast, but I'm just going to keep reminding the world that Matthew Lillard's going to be there because I am fangirling out hardcore. And then other than that, if you are still loving us and still listening, and we do have some loyal listeners, so we greatly appreciate that, just make sure that you're subscribing on however you are subscribing or following, however you listen, whether it's like Spotify or Apple.
iTunes,
that sort of thing. Thank you. Apple podcast site box.
iTunes.
Yeah, the purple thing on my phone. And definitely don't forget to review us and tell us how much you love us or how much you hate us. But, like, don't tell us how much you hate us.
Can we,
like,
delete them if that happens?
No, we can't. We just have to be, like, basically bully them into changing it. So, which neither one of us is above. So it's just going to help us keep going and everything. We, again, in our link tree, you can follow us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. Anything else, our Patreon, all that kind of stuff, if you want to be one of our patrons. So one other thing that I wanted to note is you may have noticed that when you're listening, there have been some almost like mini 30-second commercials playing.
For other podcasts.
Other podcasts.
It might confuse you because it's right after our introduction.
It is. So I put them pre-roll so everybody hears them. And basically before we get started, so you can kind of listen to it. And I figure it's easier than like breaking it up in the middle too, if there's not like a natural stopping point at the halfway point. But those are other podcasts that we know, listen to, are friends with, that kind of stuff, and want to support. They're doing the same for us. We recorded a 30-second commercial, and ours is super dorky and fabulous, and we'll play it for you sometime. maybe I'll include it at the end of this one so everybody can hear us, too.
We could probably just put it as its own little thing. Oh, wait,
we could. Oh, that's fun. That's a good idea.
I'm full of them today.
Woo! So, yeah, that's what you're hearing. And I think the only super confusing one is the True Crime Down Yonder. One of their hosts is also named Christina. So, like, their commercial started, and I didn't realize it until after I listened to it and published it. And I was like, oh, because it's like, hey, it's Christina. And I'm like, wait, but it's not me. So sorry about any confusion that might have caused. Yes. So we're going to go ahead and jump into everything now. Do we want to do a little quick recap? Do you want to recap? You don't want to recap. You just want to dive in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to recap, you can listen to the other episodes.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, just re-listen to that.
And I don't even remember where we left off.
Come join us.
To be honest. So that's kind of why I don't want to recap.
Well, at this point, a couple of things that I will remind you of. Obviously, Rebecca Zahow has been found deceased outside of the Spreckles mansion. Hanging, yes. Unfortunately, Max Shacknai, who is the child of Jonah and Dina Shacknai, has since passed away from his injuries after his fall within the Spreckles mansion. And basically where we last left before Rebecca's body was found, Adam Shacknai, who is the brother of Jonah Shacknai being Rebecca's boyfriend, Adam was staying in the guest house on the property and, according to his testimony, had taken an Ambien and gone to bed. And Rebecca had spoken to her sister Mary discussing things that she had planned for the next day. And
not suicidal.
Right. Had been making plans. There was also overnight, apparently, a voicemail left by Jonah Shacknai for Rebecca Shacknai, which was not found on Rebecca's phone, that no one has ever heard, stating the condition of Max and how it looked as though his injuries were going to be fatal for him. So kind of a turn
which for gave the motive for the suicide, according to
everyone. Some parties, right, exactly.
Everyone that thinks it was a suicide.
Right. And there are a lot of people out there, like, exploring, like, Reddit chains and stuff like that and Facebook groups. Like, it's crazy. But there are a lot of people who believe she killed herself. So kind of fast forwarding, 2013, 2 years after the death, there was a wrongful death lawsuit brought by the Zahow family, who was Mary, Rebecca's sister, and then Rebecca's parents. Her father has since passed away, and so it's the basically her late father at this point. Now, the Zahow family originally included Adam Shacknai, Dina Shacknai, and Nina Romero in...
The twin sister of Dina.
Romano. I said her last name wrong. Excuse me. Romano. However, yes, Dina's twin sister. However, as we mentioned last week, Dina and Nina were dropped from that lawsuit. So, basically, the lawsuit was brought against Adam. Again, this was not a criminal proceeding.
It's a civil lawsuit.
Civil lawsuit, meaning the person who is playing the role of the prosecution is there because of the Zahow family filing this lawsuit.
Not the state.
Right, against Adam Shacknai. And they are stating that this was a tale as old as time, if you will, the oldest reason in the book for something to happen, that Adam Shacknai sexually assaulted Rebecca, and then in order to cover it up, staged her suicide. So basically the way they break it down is in the lawsuit, the Zahow family's a team of attorneys. They state that Adam and Rebecca were alone
Rebecca had had her phone conversation with Mary. She got into the shower. And at some point after that, Adam came in, took their alone time, if you will, as an opportunity to sexually assault Rebecca. And we'll get into reasons for why he would have done that a little bit later. Sexually assaulted her with the handle of the chef's knife found at the scene. Not the blade, but the handle. And then realizing that there was no way he could get away with it, he then decided to strike Rebecca over the head 4 times with a blunt object. If you recall again from last week's episode when we talked about the second autopsy done on Rebecca Zahau's body by, you know, a third-party coroner, they found 4 basically under-the-skin marks that could not have happened during the fall based on that coroner's findings. And
so there were, like, big, I mean,
bruises. Exactly.
That's a little more intense than bruises.
Right, exactly, because they felt it could have caused a concussion or unconsciousness.
But there was no blood on the outside of her skull.
It didn't break the skin. Right, exactly.
Not skull, but, yes,
skin. Right, outside of, yeah, her body. She wasn't bleeding from anything. So that occurred, and then Adam manually strangled Rebecca and staged the suicide. So something else that they also found that we discussed last week, and you'll probably remember from the pictures I posted on Instagram, are Kristen and I kind of doing the different positions of where manual strangulation happens versus where hanging happens, and the damage that would occur to different parts, exactly, of the neck and throat area. So I think that's a definite, you know, important factor.
Yes. As well as the pooling of the blood post-mortem. Right.
Exactly. Which, again, did not happen at her feet, which if she had been
died from the hanging, it would have been
at the feet, you know, and the lower legs. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
On her back.
Right. Exactly. So let's talk about some of the evidence and some of the things that were brought up in trial. I think it's important to note that during this civil lawsuit trial, both Jonah Shacknai and Adam Shacknai took the stand. And, you know, that's not necessarily something like in a criminal proceeding that you would probably see Jonah Shacknai as like maybe a character witness or something like that for the defense.
I also just want to point out that this is different from a criminal
trial.
Thank you. if he is found guilty in this civil lawsuit, he can't be brought, right? He can't be persecuted criminally. Like, this is it?
Not necessarily. I think they usually avoid. It all depends on, like, in this case, which we'll sort of talk about towards the end. The case ended up being dismissed with prejudice, and it was settled after the verdict out of court by like through an insurance company. And so with that, you know, the case was dismissed with prejudice, meaning they can never bring these charges again.
Okay.
But at the same time, you know, kind of putting the cart before the horse a little bit, he was found guilty by a jury during this wrongful death lawsuit. And so it's one of those things where oftentimes they do not do a civil lawsuit before a criminal lawsuit, because having a guilty verdict in a civil lawsuit can greatly sway the decision of a jury in a criminal lawsuit. So,
so usually they do it when they lose the criminal.
Right, like O.J. Simpson. So in O.J. Simpson, you know, basically the Nicole Brown Simpson's family brought a wrongful death lawsuit against O.J. Simpson after he was acquitted at his criminal trial.
Right.
And, you know, after he wrote that book, you know, the If I Did It or whatever. Do you know the cover of the book? So basically it says, I did it, and then the if is really tiny sort of thing. And that's just like, oh my God, what a slap in the face to everybody. Mm-hmm. So, anyway. Anyway, exactly. I feel like the O.J. Simpson trial actually falls into, I know it's been done, but, like, it falls into, like, all of our criteria, so it may be something we want to venture into someday in the future, but that'll be, like, a 4,000-part episode, so.
Maybe not.
We'll see. Maybe we'll do something with it at some point, but, okay. So let's talk a little bit about the evidence that was brought during this wrongful death lawsuit. So first of all, DNA, or lack thereof, yes, if you will. We touched on this a little bit last week. Basically, the only DNA and fingerprints that were found on the scene were Rebecca's. Now,
and not everywhere you would expect them to be.
Right. Like, you know, things appeared as if they could have been wiped down.
Like door handles that would have been...
Right.
Often handled.
Touched. Exactly. Exactly. You know, this was a guest room at the front of the Spreckles mansion. And it is incredibly possible that she would not have been the only person to ever venture into this room or step into this room.
No other fingerprints on anything in the room.
None of the
aside
other.
Aside from her.
Family members. Found. Exactly. No other DNA. Like, no one else has ever used that shower. No one else has ever used that bathroom. Right. You know? I just feel like, you know, in my house, if you were to walk into my home, my DNA would literally be on every surface in there because there's nothing that I haven't touched, as right, well as Cosette's DNA and fingerprints and Cole's DNA and fingerprints, unless I just went through and thoroughly cleaned and wiped down every surface in the house and I was the only person in there for a day, right, or something.
Which she was not.
Exactly. That wasn't the case, you know? And it's not like it had just been cleaned, you know, 2 hours before while she was out at dinner and then she came home and, but even then.
Right, but they have cleaning people. I'm assuming.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
People who come in and clean the house.
Absolutely.
And they're not cleaning this 27 or whatever bedroom mansion themselves.
Right. Absolutely.
Weekly. So no one's DNA or fingerprints were found. Not even cleaning people, mm-hmm, or anything. Just hers.
Right.
Which is weird.
That's really weird. Incredibly weird. So for me, it's more the lack of DNA than it is.
I think that's very telling.
DNA.
Obviously, someone wiped it all down.
Right.
After.
Right. As well as that, there was an apparent boot print on the balcony. But as according to, you know, police investigators and all of that, that boot print was left by one of the investigators.
Right. Again, so when all of this happened, they were only looking at it as a suicide. So
not
they
a
didn't
homicide.
Care not to tamper with any evidence.
Right. The scene itself was not treated. Well, and that's the other crazy thing. So the scene itself was not treated as a homicide investigation.
Right.
Therefore, people were going in and out of that and still...
No DNA or fingerprints.
Right. Just hers.
Weird.
I don't know. It's one of those things like...
Except for this... boot mark.
The boot mark on the balcony. And otherwise it was like just her. So something else as far as the evidence goes is the chef's knife that we referred to. So the chef's knife we talked about last time. A couple of things with this. One, Rebecca's fingerprints were actually found on both sides of the blade as if she were holding the knife by the blade, but there were no fingerprints found on the handle.
So that's not how someone holds a knife.
Ever. Exactly. And even if, like, let's say this was a suicide thing and she was contemplating, like, stabbing herself to death or something like that or cutting her own throat, she's not grabbing this chef's knife by the handle.
Right.
That's just not the way it's happening. But on the handle, trace evidence of blood was found. And it was Rebecca's blood. It was Rebecca's menstrual blood. Now, if you recall, it would have had to have been the menstrual blood, and there had been menstrual blood found in the shower. There was a drop of it on the floor, the shower that she had used.
And a smudge on her leg.
Right. There was no trauma to Rebecca's body that would have caused bleeding externally. So the prosecution team that was bringing the civil case against Adam felt that this alleges sexual assault. The way the knife was held to create the fingerprints, they basically also found that that alleges that Rebecca could have used the knife in an attempt to undo her bindings, like on her hands to free mm-hmm. herself. It would have been pointed inward and done at a time when she was already tied up. The prosecution team believed that after Adam knocked Rebecca unconscious, you know, allegedly with these four blows with a blunt object, she woke up and attempted to free herself, but was then manually strangled by Adam and thrown over the balcony in a staged suicide. So, something else as far as the going over of the balcony and everything that mm-hmm. we discussed a bit last time was, had she, with that force, just thrown herself off of the balcony, you know, noose around the neck and everything, mm-hmm. the drop likely would have almost or fully decapitated her.
And not only that, the rope that was used was not tied to the balcony. It was tied to the posts of the bed in the room.
Side.
Which had only moved, I believe it was 7 inches mm-hmm. from where it was originally. Now, with a drop like that, they did a recreation of this. Mm-hmm. It moved feet,
yeah,
not 7 inches.
Like, dragged the bed, because that's a lot of force.
Right, and now they're saying it's a thick carpet. They were, you know, the defense is saying it's a thick carpet, so it could have stopped, like, slowed it,
mm-hmm.
but not that much.
Right. It's
7 inches is different from feet.
Right, exactly, multiple feet.
Right, not just 1 foot.
Right,
I don't
exactly.
remember how many feet exactly, but I think it was, like, 3 or 4?
That sounds right. From when it went in and everything.
So
yeah.
That's more than 4 times.
It's crazy.
Moved.
It's crazy.
It was, actually.
Yeah. Next we can talk about the literal writing on the wall. So again, as we mentioned last week, there was a note scrawled on the wall of one of the closets. It was a closet
and
door.
Black paint.
Rebecca was an artist. When they checked the paint, her prints and DNA and things.
And it matched a set. It
yep.
was one of hers.
Yep.
As was the paintbrush.
Exactly. But again, it was her paint. So of course her prints
DNA,
and
yeah.
DNA would be on it. So the writing on the wall was likely done at shoulder height. So when they brought in experts, that's basically what they said would happen. Because you, when you're writing on a surface in front of you, like think about in, you know, school or something, if you were writing on a blackboard. Right, which they don't have.
It's not that anymore.
It's a whiteboard, you know?
No, it's not. It's
what
a
is it?
Magic thing. I don't know what it's called.
A magic thing?
It's not magic. It's some computer crap.
No, like they write on the thing?
A smart board. That's what it is.
Stop! Oh my god.
A magic board.
I was like, they use magic in school now? Oh my god. What have I been missing? I am going
right?
back to elementary. I was like, do they have owls? This is all I care about. Like, Hogwarts is real? This is what you're telling me. Anyway.
Just imagine writing on the magic board
right
in front of
you're
you.
You're writing on the magic board, the blackboard, the whatever it was when you went to school, the green board, you know. And you're writing at shoulder height, you know, that's going
to
be...
You're not reaching above you to write.
Right, you're not painting something a foot above you.
Right.
I mean, Rebecca was 5'2", 5'3", I think. I said it last week, I have to pull it up. But she was
not tall.
She was my height, yeah. Like,
yeah.
She was shorter than I am, shorter than you are, you know? And so this was written at the height of someone who was roughly about 6 feet tall.
And... Let's remind Adam Shacknai is
5'11". He's a 5'11".
Okay. Yep,
5'11". And so, again, this was all evidence brought against him during the civil trial.
And the handwriting, the slants to the handwriting.
A handwriting.
The way the M was
exactly
written, matched his M's.
Yeah. A handwriting
which
expert.
Which is actually, it's very original. Not original, but it's rare.
To kind of slant that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not just the slanting, but the way he dragged his M's.
Gotcha. Okay. And I have an image here. And what I found really interesting about the image of the wording is that first S at the very beginning. And I'll post a picture of this. But the first S in the phrase, and it's, she saved him. Can you save her? The S looks as though it's totally different from the rest, as if it were added after the fact.
Oh, you're right.
Right? Yeah. So if you're looking at it, it's a totally different texture. It almost appears to be a different handwriting, as if the original message was meant to say, he saved him, can you save her? And something that I couldn't find is all of the scribble and such around here, what the story is with that. Like, if that was something that happened
at... Why is it so dirty and smudged?
Right.
The whole door.
The whole door is covered in... Literally, it looks like someone was rubbing paint in all over it and, like, squiggle marks and stuff. So, it's really cryptic. It's really odd.
It's, like, heavy-handed on all of them, but that first S is...
It's, like, choppy. It's almost, like...
It's choppy and skinny.
Staccato. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very skinny and it's...
like, not written with the same brush.
Exactly, exactly. Or the same... Whatever, it was like an afterthought, or it literally looks like, one, the spacing on the board, like clearly it's someone who wasn't planning to do this, and two, because we've all made the poster board that's supposed to say happy birthday, and like the H and the A are huge, and then the Y is like super teeny because we've run out of space. Exactly. And that's honestly how it looks on here. And I'm just thinking of all the poster boards that I've made like that. But anyway. So, you know, the handwriting expert was brought in to assess the cryptic message, you know, said according to the way these, like we've discussed, the way the letters have slanted, the way the M's are dragged, it is a match, a unique match to Adam Shackney's handwriting, but it doesn't in any way match Rebecca's handwriting. Also, what does it mean? You know? And I think it's not a suicide note. I mean, it's not apologizing for anything. It's not saying you're better off without me. It's not saying I'm doing this because.
Right.
It's
a cryptic message that no one to this day knows.
Or someone does know what it means and they've just never come forward. Right. And like that is... That's kind of my feeling on it. Like, was it put up to throw someone off the trail? Was it put up to, you know, send a message out to someone? You know, it's just bizarre. It's just very, very bizarre. And there was paint found on Rebecca's body.
Not on her hands, though.
But not on her hands. Which exactly. And it's like...
You would expect it to be there if she had... painted this.
Right, and there were no smudge marks in the lettering on the door that would match something like her body rubbing up against it, you know? Right. So it's odd. It's very, very odd. So now let's talk about the 911 call. We talked about it again. You know, some of this is repeat from last week. We definitely talked about it. But Adam starts the conversation with the 911 operator by saying, I got a girl hung herself.
Why would you ever say that?
Everybody speaks differently. We could chalk it up to that. But what I find really bizarre is, one, it's an odd way to say it. I mean, like, in any circumstance, it's really bizarre. But also, the 911 operator then has to say, you know, is she alive?
I'm sorry, what?
Exactly. Like, the 911 operator literally has to ask him, is she still alive?
He says he doesn't know.
And he has to stop what he's doing and go over and check. I mean, I see someone...
Wouldn't you be running?
I see someone hanging, and my first thought, like...
Not call 911. I mean, that would be my first thought, but I'd be running over to check.
To check the person and try and get them down and see if they're okay and see what's going on. Unless you already know that you're dead because you killed them.
Right.
Right. But, you know.
Got a girl.
Right.
What do you think that is?
And so, at the trial...
You know her.
Right, right. Well, and that's the other thing. Like, her face was probably slightly distorted... And she had the gag in her mouth, but he knew who it was. I mean, there was no mistaking who it was.
They were literally just at dinner.
Exactly. She picked him up from the airport. This was someone that he knew on a first name basis that he called to find out if he should come out.
Yeah, he knew her. So, got a girl hung herself.
Right.
Okay, not, oh my God.
My brother's girlfriend is hanging from the front of the house, you know? Like, there's, it's just really, really odd. And honestly, so then he was questioned about this at the trial, and his explanation is like, well, I said that because that's what happened. And it's just kind of like, what does that mean? How's that an explanation? Like, you know, I don't know. He just came across, like, during his testimony at the trial, he came across so nonchalant about everything. Like, it was an irritation that he had to be there.
It was an irritation that he had to be there because there were no criminal charges brought against him. So he thought,
this is ridiculous.
You know, I already got away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're just trying to take my money.
It's, I mean, and he doesn't have any money. Like, I mean, it's not like he's wealthy like his brother, you know? And I don't think this was ever really about the money because of the way they settled. Wanted... Right. They wanted to prove that he did something wrong. So at the trial, have you seen photographs of the mannequin?
Yes.
So disturbing, yes. Right? Like, really disturbing.
Yeah, I watched clips of the trial when I brought it in.
Right, and so at this trial, the attorney team representing the Zahaus basically created a lifelike mannequin that was nude and looked just like Rebecca, and they showed it in a variety of positions, including hanging, as Rebecca was found, and laying, you know, down to show the bindings in detail and all of those things. They also did a series of knot experiments because, if you remember, there were some very detailed knots used to tie and bind Rebecca Zahau's hands and feet. And so during the trial, Jonah Shacknai, he came forward and, you know, and testified stated he didn't feel that his brother could have any involvement in this, and it was also tragic, and he can't believe it. He believed it was a suicide, not a homicide, and he felt that Rebecca would have known how to tie these knots because occasionally they would go sailing and she would tie up the boat. Now, when he was asked to show how she would tie up the boat, he did a basic figure eight, you know, like you would if you were temporarily tying up a boat.
Mm-hmm.
These knots took the figure eight a step further. They pushed it a step further. So,
right. So she would have no knowledge of how to do any of these knots.
Exactly. Unless she had a weird side hobby of tying, like, nautical-based knots.
Which, to everyone else's knowledge, she did not.
Exactly. Nobody was aware of that. And, you know, so there was no matchup to that.
Tugboat captains, however.
They might know a thing or two about, they might know a thing or two. And as a reminder, Adam Shacknai is a tugboat captain. So let's talk about some of the reasons for murder. Or is there anything else as far as, like, the evidence that you wanted to dive into?
I don't think so.
Okay. Okay, because I know, I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff, like, we could go into, you know, the fact that there was a neighbor that apparently came forward after the fact and heard high-pitched screaming and a woman calling for help.
4:30 a.m., she said.
Something like that. Yeah, there were other reports.
After the fact, and, you know, sometimes you just want to be involved or want to help and you think you hear things.
Right. It could have been a wrong day. Really... Eyewitness accounts are always kind of questionable. Right. There was someone else who reported loud music being blasted from the Spreckles mansion after the dinner and everything. And I'm like, okay, probably not my number one, but again, everybody deals with things differently. The night that Rebecca killed herself, there apparently was supposed to have been a party at the property. Which obviously they canceled, but some people, because they heard music coming from the mansion, speculated that Rebecca had still had friends over, but no one else has ever come forward as having been at the property. None of the, exactly, the quote-unquote friends that were apparently supposed to be there. And plus, you know, none of it was really validated or substantiated. And again, eyewitness accounts, you know, though you'd think... They're definitely, like, one of the first things to sway a jury, because they're like, no, somebody saw this, like, so they know what happened. They're also really easily mistaken and confused.
Right.
I mean, it's not unheard of for an eyewitness to get a date wrong or get a time wrong, you know? So it's not always the most reliable evidence. So as far as the reasons for the murder... During the trial, it was alleged that it was this, you know, tale as old as time, and it was for sex. So he sexually assaulted her. He realized he couldn't get away with it, so he covered it up by killing her.
And now, if you do recall, we had mentioned that Adam Shacknai did tell the police that earlier that night, before he went to sleep, he watched porn and masturbated.
It's what we all do. You know, when our nephew is lying in the hospital.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I don't know why that was important for him to say. Maybe because...
he wanted to make sure that everybody knew that he'd already gotten his rocks off. There was no need for him to seek it out.
Or, like, if they were going to test him to see if he had recently...
ejaculated, yeah, or something like that.
And that could explain that.
He's like, oh, yeah, no, I watched porn and I masturbated. That to me is...
He just volunteered that information, like, up front.
Right.
First time the police questioned what happened that night.
Right, exactly.
Which is really weird.
And, like, that's a detail that, like, it's... unless you did it, I don't know, at the grocery store and you have a receipt because you were masturbating while you were buying orange juice. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to solidify what you were doing. You're still alone and it's unsubstantiated. Right. And, like...
that it just, to me, seems like he's trying to get in front of something.
Right. No, absolutely.
Why would you ever just volunteer that information up front?
Absolutely.
Immediately, without being questioned about anything.
Right. And, like, I think about the fact that it doesn't change anything as far as what he did and what his account is, you know, but it does... open up a lot of questions, and again, kind of questionable behavior on his part, period. Like, so he comes out here to be a support system to his brother. His brother is struggling with the fact that his son is potentially dying in the hospital after a tragic fall. And his reaction to that is to go to dinner and then go home, watch porn, and masturbate.
And then take Ambien and go to sleep.
Right, exactly. And I'm just kind of like... I don't know.
That's helpful.
Right. What are you doing there? What's your purpose? Like, what's the point? Right. And, like, again, maybe I'm just attacking this guy's character because he's acting in a way that I wouldn't act. But at the same time, it's fishy. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just weird behavior. Something else that has kind of come up in research or whatever is the reminder that sexual assault and rape have nothing to do with sex.
Right.
Whatsoever. The sexual assault, if it occurred, happened with the handle of a knife. So that to me That's anger. That's power. That's revenge.
Yeah. Hate.
Hate, exactly. That is... I mean, let's talk about what I said last week, how the nudity aspect. I mean, the fact that she was found hanging at the front of the mansion.
Right, for everyone to see.
For anyone to see. And I posted that picture of, like, the Coronado block there, mm-hmm, where the mansion is literally on the main street, and on the other side of the main street is the beach.
So it seems as though it was meant for embarrassment.
Exactly. Like, for someone to find her, to see her, for her to be exposed, you know? And I know that Dina has been cleared of everything, and I know that Dina was seen at the hospital. There's, you know, footage of her. Nina admittedly went by the house to talk to Rebecca and never got in. She was cleared of anything criminally.
To be clear, everyone was criminally cleared of anything.
Yeah. But, I mean, she was, you know, cleared from this as well. No charges were brought against her. But at the same time, I think about the fact that, well, surely Dina, who was married to Jonah, must have had some type of relationship with Adam that was a greater bond than Rebecca, his bond with Rebecca.
Well, yeah, she had known him for longer.
Exactly.
That was her brother-in-law.
Exactly. You know, and he was close enough to the family and cared enough about their family to come out when Max went into the hospital.
Right.
There was Jonah's odd behavior when he found out that Rebecca had committed suicide, almost as if it wasn't really a surprise. Like, right. There was some expectation to it. And, you know, Dina's sort of odd reaction to her having committed suicide and the way she reacted, not being like, oh my God, are you sure? Like, how could that happen? But why did she do it? You know, like suddenly wanting to know, like, what does she know that I don't, like suspecting her of something. Right. And so it's just kind of one of those very bizarre sort of things. And like, yeah, so Dina never left the hospital, but could Dina have contacted Adam and told him to do something like this? Could Jonah have contacted Adam and told him to do something like this? I mean, it's...
There's so many possibilities
and
who did it.
And it's hard to know what was actually explored and what wasn't.
Right.
And what was actually cleared and what wasn't. And I don't know. There's just a lot that really kind of makes me question everything about this. And I know Dina has also looked to have Max's case looked into as a murder instead of, or a homicide versus an accidental death.
Right.
So at the end of all of this presentation, the jury of 12 did find Adam Shacknai guilty. And so he was actually ordered to pay just over $5 million. However, as we've mentioned, you know, or as I mentioned, I don't believe that this was ever about money for the Zahau family, but instead getting answers.
Right. And having someone
held accountable for her death. They settled with prejudice out of court for $600,000. And
which is way less than $5 million.
Far less. And it was not paid out by Adam. It was paid out by an insurance company. Jonah made it very clear that he would not pay a dime to the Zahau family. And something else that has come up, you know, a lot is sort of the way that Adam spoke about the whole trial.
Adam's reaction right after walking out of the trial.
Yeah.
He was filmed.
Yeah. And he said, I am standing tall. I am not worried about these posers. They got away with something once. They got lucky.
What the hell does that mean?
Right, right.
Posers? What are you, in seventh grade?
Right. Oh my God, I know. Are they holding the skateboard, but they've never actually skateboarded? Like, I don't understand. Like, what? It's so ridiculous. I don't even know what that reference could mean.
They got away with what?
And to me, it's like...
His guilty conviction? Is that what they got away with?
But like, to me, I just think about how... When you know you're innocent, you know, first of all, you're not nonchalant about it. You are very aggressive. Like, look, I am an innocent party. Right. Like, you can say what you want, but I would never do this. You know, like you're going to fight for that. And then talk about the fact that, you know, you kind of, you're then found guilty and, I mean, maybe that's what he was trying to say, but it didn't come across that way. Like, how did they get lucky? How did they get away with something? I also think about basic psychology, and I think about projecting and how sometimes when people are upset, they have a tendency to project what they think about themselves onto others or their own actions onto others. So is he projecting that they got away with something once? They got lucky, but in reality, he was the one who got away with something and got lucky. I don't know.
Way that he words everything.
Yeah.
Throughout all of this.
Yeah.
Like, he's a weird person.
Yeah. Huh? There's a lot of things that I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I don't know what his purpose was to be there. I don't know. You know, And the worst thing that I can think of is that this poor guy was just in the wrong place at the wrong time and had nothing to do with anything. But at the same time, I feel like if that had been the case, we would have all figured it out by now. It would have been more clear by now, you right. know? Yeah. Yeah, it's totally nuts. It's totally, totally nuts. So according to an article by the San Diego Tribune in 2019, after that 2018 guilty verdict, the verdict was settled through the insurance company and then dismissed with prejudice, meaning it can never be refiled, as we talked about earlier. The Zahau family is still actively trying to get the cause of death for Rebecca changed from suicide to homicide, just like Dina is trying to change right. it from accidental to homicide. Both families, I think I spoke on this last week as well, both families have a suspicion that there was a third party or could be a third party. I know even Dina feels that it's possible that, you know, someone else was in the home and could have... done something to Max to cause his death.
Right.
And, you know, as for the mansion itself, it went up on the market shortly after all of this and then was back and forth on the market. Then eventually it sold in 2000 and... excuse me, in March of 2020. Yeah, I was just like 2000 and what's that year that we... See, I've blocked it out. I've blocked out 2020. It doesn't exist. So when I see that, I'm like, I don't understand what that means.
It sold literally right before COVID hit us.
It did. Like it did. The day before. But you know what's funny is I think COVID was already far more active in California at that point. Because remember right, the different yeah, waves. Right it was, here. Yeah, like the Asian countries, then Italy, and then California got demolished, and then New York, and... And so, like, it was right before, because, like, we locked down, because they closed March 16th of 2020 on the property, and we locked down, what, like, the second week in Surely March or yeah. something?
Well.
Or was it?
By lockdown, what do you mean?
Like.
We didn't close everything.
We stopped going to work. Like, yeah, all the offices
it was,
closed.
I think it was a little after that.
Was it? Okay.
It was after St. Patrick's Day.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
I remember, because that was my last
hurrah.
But I didn't really do anything because it was still. I went to Kim's house. It was
a good house. It was a good
time. The last time that we saw Kim for a month.
Gotcha. Okay. So. Yeah, I just remember I had, like, just gotten back from Florida. And so I got back from Florida and then went into work and the conversation was, hey, what do you think we should do? And I was like, I don't know, whatever the CDC says. And then the CDC was like, everybody's going home. Go home. So we went home.
So anyway, this house closed.
Exactly. So the house closed. It sold for $11 million. And then as of March 25th, it was listed for rent at $80,000 a month. And rented in October of 2020 for $50,000 a month. Doesn't look like there have been any major changes at this point. So I'm assuming, you know, whomever is currently renting. Well, I mean, if they had a 1-year lease, then they're still there because they'll be there through October of 2021. Mm-hmm. So all of that happened incredibly recently. Yeah. And, you know, if anything else comes up on this, we'll definitely
yeah
probably do like
it doesn't
eight
really
more
look
episodes.
Like anything will
unfortunately
I mean, the lieutenant
yeah
said like we already did a comprehensive
oh yeah the
you know investigation and it's closed
yeah the police forces it's
which
closed.
Is crazy
They're
like that was after he was found guilty in this civil like that was kind of the whole point of
doing it,
yeah,
in case new information, new evidence
to
may
prove
have come
that,
up. Yeah.
Hello, this was not a suicide. Please investigate further.
Right.
But the police still said no.
But at the same time, wouldn't then the police have to say, oh, we really screwed the pooch on this? And,
you'd think.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's easier for them to just say, well, at this point, everybody's kind of like down with the mystery, so we're just going to leave it be and not reopen it. Sort of thing, but to me, it there's so much more that needs to be said about it. So
right. It's not even a cold case; it's just closed as a suicide,
right? Which is crazy. Which it's so
it's not,
crazy.
It's just obviously not.
Yeah, Yeah. So that's it. That's all we got for Rebecca's a How.
That's it. After 3 episodes, finally done with it.
I know. And honest to God, if you see me on the street, just say Rebecca's a How, and I'm going to go, oh my God, seriously? So, be ready for that. Yeah. So, I mean, if you guys have any details that you want to share with us or bring to our attention, we would love to hear it. Again, make sure you are subscribing. Make sure you are following. Make sure you are rating us, giving us 8,000 stars. All the stars. I just want baskets of stars shipped to my house.
Say baskets?
Baskets. Baskets of stars. I don't know why I spoke like that. I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry. It just came out wrong. Okay. And make sure you come and see us at CT Horror Fest because we've got cool stickers and
we'll have some merchandise as well. Not just some stickers.
But more importantly, we have cool stickers. Oh, and I made nifty little business cards for us that have our logo on one side and then a QR code on the back. And so people can just scan it and it takes them to our link tree. And then our link tree can take them to like our Facebook,
everywhere,
our Patreon, our Instagram, all the good stuff. So you should totes my goats come and see us because we're a good time. Plus Matthew Lillard's going to be there.
Oh, Jesus. People just turned their volume because you started whispering.
I know. And then I screamed at them. I was going for shock value. So I hope I achieved it. Yeah. So.
All right. That's it for today.
That's it.
Thanks
you guys
for listening.
Take it easy. We love ya. And we'll see you next week with a much shorter case.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, it's Christina
and Kristen from
the Real Crime Podcast. Have you ever been curious about the real estate side of true crime?
What happens to houses after someone dies in them?
How dangerous is it really to be in real estate?
Where did your favorite serial killer grow up?
Well, we have the show for you. This is a podcast from the perspective of an active realtor
and a true crime junkie.
Give us a listen. You might be disappointed,
but listen anyway.